Welcome to the Full of Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 5:52 British Summer Time. Today is August 28th, and of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. But first, let's have a review of what's been happening this week, and the general tone of what's been happening in markets can, I think, be encapsulated in one word, which has been steady. The majority of markets haven't done very much at all this week, and we've seen that with the S&P down in the region of 6 points today, and barring any major move into the end of this week, we'll see that they're closing out this week very much where they started in the vast majority of cases. In the case, for example, of China, we've had a number of moves in excess of 2%, both up and down, but it's closing out the week very much towards the lower side of its range, which is more or less where it started the week. In Asia, the majority of markets are below their highs, but not significantly so, and we continue to see these ranging consolidations. In Europe, a number of markets broke to incremental new highs this week, but haven't improved upon that performance to any great extent, although we continue to see that the majority of these markets are in consistent advances. They are becoming increasingly overextended relative to their moving averages. But as long as we continue to see them pushing upwards to new high ground and the absence of downward dynamics, well, then I think there isn't going to be too much panic among the long investors out there. Of course, this is also the end of August, and September is an interesting month because we'll have a large number of people coming back from holiday, and they'll be looking at these markets and saying, well, August has been a relatively positive month for the majority of stock markets. The question, of course, is going to be whether they're going to come into this market in any kind of size and push these indices up to new high ground, or whether they're going to stand pat for a while. And interesting reports or articles have been written in the last week about the amount of leverage that is outstanding, that we're seeing trading houses increase their leverage, and we're also seeing that the potential conditions are certainly amenable to carry trades being reopened, which is simply a funding exercise in increasing leverage. And the destinations for this leverage have been among the best performers since the March lows. The vast majority of stock markets remain in these relatively consistent advances, which are becoming increasingly overextended. Now, the more overextended they become, the larger we can anticipate that the eventual reversion towards the mean will be. And we have two templates as for what that will look like. One is in the China example, where it fell by approximately 20% in less than 3 weeks and has been consolidating or ranging close to its lows over the last 10 days or so. And this has been a rather abrupt pullback towards the mean. A number of the banks continue to push lower, and we may indeed see perhaps incremental new lows here, but it's still within this reversionary process. And what is most likely is that we're going to have this ranging consolidation, potentially over a number of months, as the index pulls back towards the mean and unwinds some of this overbought condition that was evident until about 3 or 4 weeks ago. We also have the potential for a number of these leading markets to simply range sideways and allow the mean to catch up with them. And I think the one that has the greatest potential for that is the Taiwanese market, which has been ranging for much of the last 6 weeks, and that average is slowly edging its way up towards the lower side of that range. And of course, we could easily have a hybrid of the two, where we have sharp declines followed by large amounts of ranging in between. So we remain in this consistent advance. What we are also seeing is that the developed markets are at a point where they may outperform in the very short term. From the point, that's not too difficult to rationalize in view of the fact that they are mostly in the process of breaking upwards from their bases. In that case, it takes less of a move to produce a larger percentage advance than it does for some of the leaders which have left their base formations behind in the dust months ago. But there's also the fact that when we look at the ratio of the MSCI emerging markets relative to the S&P, it's retraced its entire decline from last year and has been losing momentum over the last 6 or 7 weeks, and there's potential for that ratio to contract somewhat if we do see these developed markets continuing to push upwards from their bases. Because they're overextended relative to the moving average, there is the potential out there that we're going to get this reversionary type action. But because we have this two-speed performance in stock markets, the reversion is likely to take a different shape and form in leaders rather than laggards. Whatever way we see the leading markets pull back, whether it's in a sharp reaction to the mean or a ranging reaction, that's all it's likely to be, is a simple reversion to the mean within the process of what is already a quite obvious bull market. And once that reversion has taken place, we're more than likely to see those leading markets leading once more on the upside. They bottomed first, they broke upwards first, they've had the biggest percentage gains, they've moved into consolidations first, and they're likely to break upwards from those consolidations first as well. But for lagging markets, because they are in percentage terms and in developmental terms, in terms of the new bull market, so much further behind, what we're likely to see is a first step above the base forming. And that is probably the best case scenario, particularly for some markets such as the S&P or the Dow, which are lagging the vast majority of other markets. If they can hold on to the majority of their gains, particularly since July, then and range in the region of the upper side of their base, hopefully above their base, and let it be a little bit more clear, then that will certainly over time help to unwind those very bearish forecasts which continue to come out. They haven't gained an awful lot of ground in the last 6 or 7 weeks because the advance has been so powerful. But if we do move into a more reactionary type phase, the bearish arguments will come out, they will sound convincing, because there are still large economic problems that need to be worked through. But as long as stock markets can hold the majority of their gains since March, and particularly since July, then a first step above the base is likely to be in the offing. That's a very reliable continuation pattern. And because we have seen the S&P breaking upwards from its base, then that confirms that our intuition that we've had for a number of months, that the March low was indeed the low, and that we are in a new bull phase for pretty much all global stock markets at this point. And while there are arguments out there that the US is going to be was the first into recession, it'll be the first out of recession, that doesn't stand up when we look at the performance of stock markets. We continue to see that Wall Street is one of the laggards. It's likely to remain one of the laggards. But the Wall Street leash effect is also very much at play here. And the Wall Street leash effect states that as long as Wall Street is steady to rising, it provides something of a tailwind to other markets around the world. And that has certainly been the case since March and is likely to remain the case as long as we continue to see a relatively consistent advance on Wall Street. If we see a more reactionary type environment coming through on Wall Street, then there is greater potential for that swifter reaction towards the mean evolving in some of those leading markets. For the moment, with With the S&P, for example, holding very steady above 1,000 points, it really would need to pull back significantly below 1,000 to indicate that we're into a more reactionary type environment, and it has held its gains remarkably well over the last week. So we know that there is a reactionary type environment in our future, and that the chances are we are closer to the next larger reaction than we are to the next really big advance in stock markets. But it isn't unfolding just yet. Longer term, we can look at the performance of the leading markets out there, which are concentrated in emerging Asia and commodity producing Latin America, and indeed in technology-led markets. And in those two, we have secular themes and cyclical themes. Technology, which had that big bust back in 1999, 2000, is unlikely to get back up to the Nasdaq highs anytime soon. But individual technology shares and technology-led markets are certainly moving in a cyclical bull trend. And that is something that probably has a couple of years left to run in it. We continue to see that world-leading or technology companies that have an international franchise are doing really quite well and are coming in above their estimates in the latest reporting season. And that is a trend that has been duplicated across a wide range of markets, and that is that companies that have a large global franchise, well diversified, with the ability to weather the storm in their domestic market by having growing exposure in some of the emerging markets, are among the best performers in a large number of markets. And that makes common sense. The companies that have large exposure to the domestic economies of the USA or to Europe are probably going to find it more difficult to outperform the market than those that have a big international franchise. The economic problems that are outstanding in the US and in large parts of Europe are going to take time to unwind, and it is the exporters that are likely to do best over that time frame. When we think about where we want to invest, we are almost certainly going to have the best stock market performance in some of these emerging markets. And the question for investors is, will they be able to gain that benefit due to currency differentials? And what we've seen, particularly over the last couple of months, has been that emerging market currencies have been some of the strongest out there. That the carry trade phenomenon can now no longer just be the yen carry trade, because there's potential for carry trades to be put on in yen, euro, pound, or dollars with remarkably low interest rates, with governments in those areas being motivated towards having a weak currency much more than the emerging markets, who have really a greater focus on holding down inflation. And certainly inflationary pressures are going to start building in commodity-related markets much faster than they do in those economies that were most affected by the credit crisis. And commodity prices have been really very strong over the last 3 to 4 months, particularly. The commodities that have done best have been those that would be seen to benefit directly from stimulus packages and the return of growth to the Asian region in particular. So that's industrial metals and the energy complex. And that's a similar story to what we saw back in 2003. Now, that was the beginning of a synchronized global economic expansion, and we're probably not going to have that on this occasion, at least to begin with. But what we are seeing is that a large number of emerging markets have been able to avoid recession. They are in much better competitive positions than some of their developed market counterparts, and it is likely to be in these markets that we see inflationary pressures pop up, And domestically, we're going to see that commodity price inflation is likely to be the first place we see any type of inflationary pressure building. It's probably not going to be in wages or in house prices or in the majority or in manufactured goods, but where we continue to see inflationary pressures are in services and in government supplied services particularly. That is something that we may see a diminution of over the coming years as governments attempt to cut wage bills and that type of thing. But there isn't a lot they can do about commodity price inflation. And with the way that we're seeing a number of these leading commodities shaping up, there is remarkable recovery potential, particularly in the industrial commodities and in energy. The soft commodities appear to be taking that bit longer. For example, we did see a large move to the upside in Arabica coffee, in orange juice, and in sugar. Now, sugar has held the majority of its gains because it was also driven by the lack of rain in India. But the others, as soon as we got some dry weather in Brazil, they have come down rather swiftly. And grain markets outside of soybeans are dribbling along the lower side of their ranges. So it is certainly in the industrial metal complex that we're seeing the greatest relative strength, followed closely by the energy complex. And as I said, that is very similar to what we saw back in 2003. And of course, part of the reason that we're seeing commodity prices being so firm, and the strength that we're seeing in so many risk assets, such as stock markets and indeed the credit markets, is because of the vast amount of liquidity that has been pumped into the markets to combat the threat of global deflation. And this obviously isn't the first time that we've seen large amounts of liquidity getting pumped into the market, but it is probably the first instance in which we've seen such a concerted example of vast amounts of liquidity being pumped into the markets by just about every country in the world. There's a whole host of initiated stimulus packages of one form or another, or bank bailouts and cutting interest rates and increasing money supply in an effort to combat the slowdown in the velocity of money. And central bankers find themselves in a very difficult position because if they attempt to remove this wash of liquidity that's out there too early, they're going to kill off the nascent recovery that appears to be developing, and they could find themselves in a Japan-type situation where they would have zero growth or stagflation for a prolonged period of time. On the other hand, if they leave it in the system for too long, they could risk sparking another asset bubble, making the same mistake that they made following the Nasdaq bust and 9/11. So the chances are they're going to attempt to plot a middle course, and that means that they are going to, well, they would be well advised to attempt to use some different methods to curtail any nascent asset bubble. What that really does suggest is that we're unlikely to see asset bubbles developing in some of the developed economies, because central bankers domestically in those economies will be looking for signs of an asset bubble inflating and are likely to put a cap on it before we head into any kind of mania stage. On the other hand, there is little they can do to put a cap on a mania developing in emerging markets, or for investors to start moving their various currencies abroad in an effort to find a better return. If investors come to the conclusion that central bankers in the US and Japan and the UK and Europe are diluting their currencies by printing too much of them, why hold those particular currencies when other economies are being run in a more responsible manner, have higher interest rates, higher rates of return, and those rates of return can be captured by investing in those countries. There is the strong possibility that if we do have central bankers around the world leaving the liquidity in the market for too long, then we will likely have an asset bubble somewhere in an emerging market or potentially in the commodity complex. And the prime recipient of capital from that type of trade could easily be gold. Gold has been consolidating in the region of $950 for much of the last 6 weeks. It was up $8 today, and it's posted the first higher high in a month. And while we have levels within levels from the really choppy trading that we've had over the last 3 or 4 months in the gold market, looking at it longer term, it's been consolidating close to its highs for 18 months and has been edging back up towards that $1,000 level really quite steadily over the last 3 months in particular. It would appear to be only a matter of time before we see it sustain a move above $1,000. And as we talk about and explain in the chart seminar, a trading range is an explosion waiting to happen because demand is thinned out below the market, but supply is thinned out above the market. And if it were to pop to the upside, then it hits a vacuum of supply and can really push higher very quickly. We've seen it happen on two previous occasions, and nothing has happened yet to derail the possibility that that is what's going to happen with gold again. September, October is a seasonally favorable time for something like that to happen because that's when it happened before. This idea is beginning to gain ground, and we haven't seen gold actually do this just yet. So we also need to bear in mind what would be the things that would question gold actually being able to sustain this move above $1,000. If it were to take out the progression of higher lows with a sustained move below $900, that would cap the potential in the short term, potentially in the medium term. And we would then be moving into a longer reaction than we'd seen previously. And we would we'd be starting to have questions about the integrity of what has been generally a rather consistent advance over the last 7-8 years. That would be a major inconsistency. So what gold needs to do is to continue to improve and to push successfully above the $1,000 level. With government bonds, we see that prices are relatively steady over the last week, and yields are below the highs that we saw back in July, I think, where we've seen that the 10-year in the US has jumped from 2% to 4% and is consolidating below 4% at present. 2% was likely the bottom. Given the massive quantity of liquidity that governments have put into the market and the vast quantity of paper that they are printing because of the socialization of debts that they are taking on, there isn't going to be a shortage of government paper out there. And increasingly we're seeing that the likelihood of a decade-long deflation is becoming a remote possibility. Then, looking at yields at such remarkably low levels, we can say that there is a strong likelihood we've seen a bottom in yields. Depending on how long it takes for the major economies of the world to get back to a growth footing, the base formation development phase could take anything from months to years, but we're unlikely to see 2% again on the 10-year. And since we've seen the low, It means that rallies in government bond prices are probably better short opportunities than long opportunities. And that's likely to be the case for a prolonged period of time. If we do see central bankers messing up the process by which they will attempt to remove the liquidity from the market, we could end up with an inflationary type problem. And certainly where that is likely to show up first will be in the commodity markets. But if it hits the public consciousness, we will start to see interest rates starting to creep upwards, and government bond yields will be an interesting area to watch over the coming decade to see where they begin to go. From an investment perspective, the fuller money themes have been very well represented in the majority of this advance, particularly since October in the leading markets, but more especially from the March lows. And there is a strong likelihood that it is going to be fuller money themes where the story of the next big bull market is focused. Longer term, there is a strong likelihood we're going to have an asset bubble developing at some point in one of the fuller money themes. By the time it ends, it will be blown out of all proportion, and we will need to be aware of the mania that is developing, but that is something that we will be dealing with a number of years from today. We're still in the very early stages of a new bull market, which is a little bit overextended in the short term, but has significant upward potential in the medium to longer term. And with that, I will leave you for the weekend and wish all the best to all of you.